take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like St. Vincent de Paul, the Axley Law Firm, and of course, our friends at S&I Remodeling and Madison Computer Works, as well as AMS. Joining us now, the first person who got into the state Supreme Court race, which will be coming up in the spring of 2018, actually in the winter of 2018, if there is a primary at the time, Tim Burns. He is an attorney with the law firm of Cole & Perkins. You've done litigation regarding insurance, and you will be joined by a couple other candidates. Incumbent Michael Gabelman announced that he is not running for election. Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hey, Sly. Good to meet you. I am a lawyer in Madison. I grew up as an Army brat. My parents were originally from Mississippi. My father grew up as a sharecropper in Mississippi and had a fifth grade education. He was forced out of school by poverty in the fifth grade. And my mother was forced out of school by poverty in the 10th grade. After my father got out of the military, I lived in Utah for a number of years, and I grew up in the 1970s. When we had the strongest middle class in the history of the planet, and I was able to work hard and fulfill my dreams. And my dream was to become a lawyer.
Now, you don't have a Southern accent.
So it's faded by now. So I think I spent a total of 3 or 4 years in Mississippi.
Okay.
During my life.
Okay. Explain the type of law you do. I didn't really understand, by just reading the law firm's website, not being an insurance lawyer, I don't really understand what you do. Tell people what you do.
Okay, so the common nexus in what I do is I sue insurance companies. I stand up the insurance companies for businesses and for law firms and for ordinary people. And for a long time, the largest part of my practice was suing insurance companies for businesses when the businesses had disputes with insurance companies. Over the past few years, I've brought a number of class action cases against life insurance companies when they did things that endangered their purchasers.
So you have decided to get into a race that is coming on the heels of very turbulent times for Wisconsin. I think really, it seems to me, and maybe you, I don't know if you were here at the time, but it seems to me the lead paint case is when the real partisan or the real ideological divide began to rip apart the Supreme Court. And at that time, the majority of the court ruled in favor of the children of Milwaukee against the paint manufacturers. And that really, really angered the Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce and other business interests. You think that's, you agree with me that that's really where the ideological divide deepened?
Well, certainly in Wisconsin, that was a focal point. But I'm sorry, I have to say
Tim, for some reason we're losing you. Hey, Tim, we're losing you a little bit here. Are you getting in a fuzzier spot with your phone?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Is this better?
Yeah, a little better.
I'm so sly. What I'm starting to say is this is part of a 40-year problem, not only involving Wisconsin, but really involving every state in the country and the federal courts as well. And I think over the past 40 years that a number of folks in the right wing have made a concerted effort to weaken our middle-class economy. And they've done it through the courts, and they've done it through the legislatures. But the courts have been one of the most important parts of weakening our economy and our democracy. And they've
are you referring to, because I'm trying to pick a genesis of this. You know, I've read about one of Richard Nixon's justices who, before he was appointed to the court, had written this memo talking about how it was time for, you know, business and corporate America to regain their strength. And he was very angry about the ban on cigarette advertising. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, it's part of the history. The Powell Memorandum, which was written in 1971 or 1972 by Lewis Powell, who a few months later joined the Supreme Court, was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Nixon. But it's been much more than the Powell Memorandum. Then the conservatives, through the Federalist Society and by the appointment of judges, have become judges in many instances and have taken a dim view of laws that we put in place from the 1930s through the mid-1970s that protected small farms, small businesses, the labor movement, public education, our diverse communities. And I think the reading of the narrow reading that the conservatives have given those laws has really hurt our middle class economy.
All right,
I mean,
but they
at the time I grew up, we had the strongest middle class economy on the planet, and now we lag behind Germany in terms of a middle class economy. And you don't get a rigged system like we have without having rigged courts.
So, for you, this isn't right versus left. This is about big, powerful, special interests putting a thumb on the scale of justice. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. This isn't so much pointing at just one political party and saying this political party has done all the wrong and that political party has not done any wrong. What I'm saying actually is that there's been a concerted effort by big money, mostly by inherited wealth and huge conglomerates, to change our society from what it was like in the mid to late 1970s and the years preceding that.
All right, you've heard the verbiage that the Federalist Society uses: balls and strikes. Interpret the law, not write the law. You've heard all the cliches, right? You've heard everyone.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Now, when you start changing the law radically and legislating from the bench, you know, the first thing you do, you point at the other side and say they're legislating from the bench.
Okay.
But they're the one changing the laws. But Sly, look at what our society was like in the mid to late 1970s. And I think you'd be forced to agree with me that we had an amazing middle class and a vibrant democracy. It wasn't perfect, but it was certainly improving constantly. And 40 years of these guys in power has radically changed it.
Give me, if Houdini were alive today and we were to record him and slow it down, we'd be able to see what the trick is, right? We'd be able to see how the sleight of hand works. Have you figured out how their sleight of hand works with this whole interpret the law rather than write the law, or strict interpretation of the law? How do they pull this off?
Well, let me give you an example. And, a good example might be the case upholding Act 10. What you do is you have a legislature pass the law that hurts a major constituency of democracy, a major pillar of a democracy, like the labor movement and like public education. And then you have a majority of the court come in and uphold the law, even though everybody knows that that law is aimed at harming the labor movement and harming the Democratic Party. And so you have situations like that. You have the narrowing through judicial decisions of our antitrust laws just this past term.
Well, let me stop you there for just a minute. So, but what went before the court on Act 10 wasn't whether the legislature had the right to do what they did, but how they did it, correct?
No. I mean, when the law is challenged, the law is challenged on the basis that the legislature was acting outside its constitutional authority.
Well, it was challenged in a number of ways, correct?
Right. Okay. There were a number of ways that
so let's make sure we're talking about the same thing. It was challenged on how it was and whether it was lawfully passed, correct?
Sure.
It okay. So let's stick to that for just a second.
Lawfully passed, right. But also whether it was permissible legislation under the Constitution.
Before we get to that, let me ask you, when they affirmed the way the legislature passed that, and I've heard John Nichols from the Capital Times use this term frequently, he calls the Wisconsin Supreme Court majority a lawless court. Do you think that was a lawless decision, and do you think the Wisconsin Supreme Court is lawless?
I think it's part of a larger lawless movement. These have been decisions over the past 40 years and more recently on the Wisconsin Supreme Court that sort of forget the fundamental purposes of our democracy and end up sort of gutting laws and that hurt that helped our democracy in enforcing laws that clearly don't help our democracy.
Tim Burns with us here at sliceoffice.com. He is a candidate for the Supreme Court. So you've talked about the right wing making sure that people don't get their fair day in court. Let me challenge you on that assumption on a couple cases. Okay, the U.S. Supreme Court, a couple of years ago, well, actually more than a couple of years ago now, made the Kelo decision having to do with eminent domain. The progressives in the majority in that case, with a little help from Anthony Kennedy, ruled in favor of a community being able to take someone's house away from them and basically give the land to a private developer. The conservatives on the court ruled against that. I have to tell you, I was horrified by the Kelo decision. In that case, it sure looked to me like conservatives were standing up for the little guy, and Stephen Breyer and Ruth Bader Ginsburg failed to stand up for the little guy.
Well, think about what the decision was really challenging. I mean, the whole point of our country, in my view, over the past 250 years has been the idea that we self-govern, that communities can get together and make broad and fair laws that decide how we live as a people. And, you know, when the colonists were saying no taxation without representation, they actually weren't talking about taxation. They were talking about representation. They wanted to be part of their own government. Now, bring that forward to the case that you mentioned. What happened is that by ruling in favor of the landowner, the court would have been severely restricting the power of us as a people to govern. And I mean, these aren't easy decisions.
You don't see a distinction between taking a landowner's property away, much like Donald Trump wanted to take that woman's property away in Atlantic City, for a private entity versus, say, a school or a highway or some other public entity. You don't draw a distinction there?
No, certainly distinctions can be drawn between doing it for a private entity and doing it for public purposes, but you also have to take into account whether people can self-govern and whether they can regulate property in a way that makes sense to the entire community. And I think that's more of what was going on there. Are we going to be able to regulate ourselves in a way that makes sense? It can't all be about vested property interests in this country. And, you know, so sometimes it's about the vested property interests of that small homeowner, fairly small homeowner, but more often than not, it's about the vested property entry of vast concentrations of inherited wealth. And we can't have such respect for that property interest that we no longer are able to govern ourselves. We're no longer able to pass reasonable environmental regulations.
So, but in this case, you're siding with the big developer over somebody who owns a little home in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Let me say this. It's been quite a while since I've read that case, and I would want to look at it closely if I were making a decision about the case. But look, to be a fair judge, it isn't about who's on one side or other of the legal dispute. You know, even though I have my own political values, it isn't like I would want only people with my political values to win in these cases. You try to be fair and impartial, and you try to make principled decisions that apply evenly, whether you have someone who agrees with you on your side or someone who you find disagreeable on your side of the equation. You have to apply principles fairly in right. the same way to both sides.
Right. And, of course, ultimately that development never happened. The homes were torn down. The property was gone. But the development never happened. Stand by. We'll talk more with Tim Burns. He is running for the Wisconsin Supreme Court at SliceOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Tim Burns, one of a handful of candidates running for the state Supreme Court. Explain to me what's going on with the situation with Michael Gableman. Here's an incumbent who business interests spent a lot of money get elected. He kind of came out of nowhere. They had appointed him up. Governor McCallum had appointed him to a judgeship way up in Burnett County. He didn't have a long legal record. He kind of came out of nowhere. And 10 years later, after all the momentous decisions that he's been part of, I know for a fact that he had been asking people for their endorsements. I won't say who, but, you know, word gets around. He suddenly drops out of the race. Now, I know there had been rumors, but doesn't this strike you as odd?
Well, certainly it's odd, and I had probably heard many of the same rumors you had since I've been involved in this race, whether he's going to run or whether he's not going to run. And my personal view is that he was likely to run because my experience in life is people give up power very shyly. They don't do it very often. And so I certainly thought that he was run, but I have no inside knowledge of what contributed to his decision.
Well, I know this. It's amazing that the one of the people who defended Act 10 in court and just recently was appointed by Governor Walker to the circuit court in Sauk County and then reelected unopposed last year, I guess it would have been. This Michael Skronik, he got in the very next day. So it kind of seems like it kind of seemed like they had this mapped out, doesn't it?
I would agree with you that the timing was interesting.
And I haven't seen any other conservatives jump into this race.
Same here. And, you know, there's still a while yet here for other right-wing folks to jump into the race. But you're right. No one besides Judge Scrinac has jumped in.
Were you surprised that the unemployment case that labor attorney Marilyn Townsend took to the court, that she got a 7-0 unanimous decision on that?
I certainly saw the case, and it did strike me at the time as a bit surprising that she got that decision, just knowing what the court has been like over the past 10 years. But that did seem to a case, seem the type of case that would lend itself to that type of decision in favor of the unemployment, the person to be compensated.
Well, she kind of pointed out to them the way the law was written, and I guess it was clear enough that that other judges had sort of looked beyond and over it. Everybody talks, I would imagine every judge in Wisconsin thinks that they're fair and thinks they're being fair. But every judge brings some sort of bias or blind spot. Would you agree?
Certainly. I mean, we're mortals. We've known this for, you know, well more than 100 years. But there was, of course, a movement during the 1920s, 1930s called the legal realism movement. And the whole focus of this movement was to point out that judges make decisions, at least in some part, based on political dispositions. And I mean, we see it today. I mean, you know, we see cases in which the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court line up case after case based on the party that either appointed them or helped in their election.
There are the Michael Crooks of the world.
I agree, but keep in mind that even the Michael Crooks of the world have their own philosophical predisposition.
They are, but, you know,
but decide cases.
Right, and you know, that's very true, and I disagreed with him on plenty of things, but I think in the end, and of course, unfortunately, he passed away. I can say at the end of the day, I may not have agreed with him on every case, but I could say that I thought he truly looked at cases objectively.
Let me say this. I think that, you know, hopefully most judges out there are trying to, even if they have strong philosophical leanings, they're trying to apply things in the same way for different litigants. But it doesn't take away from the fact that if a judge has a strong political disposition that's harmful to democracy or harmful to a middle-class economy, that you have to worry about the judge, because these judges do line up based on political disposition.
Let me ask you about your other opponent, Rebecca Dallet, who's a circuit court judge who's been on the bench for a while now and is a former prosecutor. When she got in the race, your campaign manager put out a statement saying that she was more conservative than you were and that you were concerned that she was really kind of stressing the fact that she'd been a prosecutor. And that is not stressing being tough on crime is not an objective way to go into the court. Now, you and I both know that the Wisconsin Supreme Court is not a criminal court, but there's a perception that it is. Do you think that Rebecca Dallet is coming to the would be on the bench with an unfair bias because of being a prosecutor?
Not necessarily being a prosecutor, but let me just be real frank about this. What I don't like seeing is for the last several years, while they were literally picking the pockets of citizens by passing laws very harmful to the middle class economy and very harmful to democracy, the right wing has pointed again and again at how soft certain people that they're running against are on crime. Let me tell you something. The Koch brothers in Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, they don't care about crime in our communities. What they care about is fundamentally changing our economy and fundamentally changing our democracy. So what I worry about when a candidate for the court gets out there and runs on the view that she or he was a former prosecutor is that isn't going to the key issue of our day, which is, are we going to have a democracy and a middle-class economy? Are we going to talk about things that divide us when there's really no division? I mean, liberals care about crime in communities. They care deeply about their communities. But what really divides us is the notion that one side wants to radically change what our middle-class economy was like and has succeeded in many ways to do that from, the time we grew up. And the other side is opposed to that.
Let me ask you this. It turns out that Rebecca Dallet has some sort of friendship with her daughter, has some sort of friendship with Patience Rogensack's daughter. There's some sort of connection there. Rogensack gave Dallet money. Dallet has endorsed Rogensack. Do you think that's a strike against Dallet in being a member on the bench?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think in particular the endorsement of Patience Rogensack and the taking of money from her campaign would be a strike against anyone. As the conservative candidate, what would he think if someone had endorsed, Shirley Abramson for the court or taking money from her campaign? I will tell you, I will not be endorsing Patience Rogensack or taking money from her campaign.
Well, one of the reasons Patience Rogensack is on the court is because the trial attorneys back in 2003 did not get behind Judge Bruner, Ed Bruner, to the extent that normally they would, because Bob Habish was angry at a couple of Bruner's decisions, which I thought was cutting off their nose despite their face. And Patience Rogensack sort of ran as a moderate. She's been anything but a moderate. She's been as predictably right-wing as Michael Gableman her entire tenure on the court. And as I go through the most recent case where they pushed through this decision not to talk about how they govern their body, in front of the cameras, I think she's taken the court backwards a great deal. Do you?
I'm very concerned about Chief Justice Rogensack. I'm very concerned, like I told you, with what appears to have been a movement for the last 40 years to harm something that I care deeply about, two things that I care deeply about, our democracy and our middle-class economy. They are the things that made me possible, coming from parents, who weren't able to complete even high school education. I wouldn't be here today without our democracy and our middle class economy. And when folks don't protect it, when they do things that harm it, I'm extremely concerned. And, you know, as you well know, Justice Rogan Sack at the time was one of the justices who upheld Act 10.
Tim Burns, how do people find out more about you?
So we have a great website, burnsforwisconsin.com.
All right, Tim Burns, thanks for coming to SliesOffice.com. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Sly.
SliesOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.